A lot of the recent work I've done as a postdoc was on the use of computer vision for estimation of body weight. And so in that context, we use depth cameras, which means that each pixel is not a color, it is a height information of or the distance from the camera to the object in the frame. I didn't publish any of these things. I have abstracts. As I said, my postdoc was pretty short, but I think it was enough to understand that the technology works. And I think it has not been applied yet in real settings.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Did you know that beta-carotene deficiency can affect fertility rates and reproductive performance? Victa's transition from DSM Firmenich provides beta-carotene to help your cattle fertility rates. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show. This is Mark Thomas from Dairy Health, and it's a pleasure today to have Enrico Casella with us today. Enrique joins us from Penn State University, where he's an assistant professor. Good afternoon, Enrico.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So as usual, Enrico and I had some opportunity to catch up before the recording here, and really looking forward to the discussion. Enrico, his focus is in using computer science and AI. And we talked about some imaging and some different projects he has from all the way from beef cattle, dairy calves, and turkeys. So with that, Enrico, can you give us a little bit of an introduction of your background? You're originally from Italy, and how you got to be in State College.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my trajectory is, I guess, a bit unusual. I started my studies in the south of Italy, in Sicily, as doing computer engineering. So I got my bachelor's and master's in there. And then there's just been a lot of sliding doors that eventually led me to animal science. I think the first one most impactful was I came to the US for a visiting for a master's thesis. And that's where I eventually met my PhD advisor, Simone Silvestri. And so then I did my PhD at University of Kentucky in computer science. And I actually started doing some work with horses. I don't know how it works in other departments, but in my department, you could either be a TA, teaching assistant, or a research assistant. At the time, my advisor didn't have funding for me to be a research assistant. So he loved horses, and Lexington, Kentucky, being the horse capital of horses, the work capital of horses, we did some work. You know, he said, like, in the morning I go train my horse and I don't have a way to track what I'm doing with the horse. I have this Fitbit that tells me when I'm running, it tells me when I am doing a workout, but I cannot do the same with horses. And so we kind of worked on developing exactly a Fitbit application for detecting horse gaits from the accelerometer that's built into the smartwatch. And that was interesting because many other works basically looked at putting the sensors on the animals. But when you're preparing a horse for that type of practice, it's already so time consuming. So we thought this needs to be seamless and unobtrusive. And so we developed that application. And I think that's how a few years later, Dr. Joao Costa, who at the time was also at University of Kentucky, reached out to us to do some work on bovine respiratory disease in dairy calves. That's what I started working very closely with his PhD student at the time, Dr. Melissa Cantor. And we really squeezed everything we could from that data set. And I had a lot of fun kind of applying my computer science skills and the predictions and the machine learning there. And actually, funny enough, right now, Dr. Melissa Cantor is my colleague here at Penn State. So we kind of took this trajectory where we started. I started with her, and now we're colleagues.
Small world.
Yeah, exactly. But I really loved doing that work because it was very applied and very real. The previous work I was doing was just as exciting, but it didn't have anything to do with animals, and it was a bit more abstract. So then when it was time to look for my next position, I was looking for postdocs, and then Dr. Melissa Cantor introduced me to João Doria at UW-Madison. And so I had a call with him, and he talked to me about all this stuff he was doing with computer vision, artificial intelligence in dairy cattle. And I was like, this is my calling. I knew exactly what I had to do. So I took a bit of a leap of faith, because when you switch so hardly from like something like so high tech as computer science is to something that I envisioned animal science as, this like more like rural settings, I was like, this might be a bit of a risk, but I think it paid off extremely. And I did 1 year there, UW-Madison, with a great group. And now I am, the formal name is Assistant Professor of Data Science for Animal Systems here at Penn State. I started July 2024, so it's been just 3 months. And I'm also a co-hire of the Data Science Institute here, which kind of connects together a lot of researchers in the university for multidisciplinary research, which is basically what I do.
Excellent.
Beta carotene can impact reproductive performance in cattle. Because the main sources of beta carotene are forages, most cattle don't get enough. Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich contains a blend of beta carotene and mixed tocopherols, which provide needed vitamin A and antioxidants. Victus Transition fed cattle have better fertility rates and improved colostrum quality. Make sure your cattle get the beta carotene they need with Victus Transition. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/victus-transition.
So thanks for that background, Enrico. Certainly interesting trajectory, as you said, and some great opportunities to collaborate with some great experts and folks in the field. So new program, new place, you're in State College. We chatted a little bit about some of your projects and some of the grants, but tell us a little bit about what you have planned and some of your thoughts there. You know, one was related around heat abatement, which got me excited given living here in Torreon, Mexico. But give us a little background about some of your projects and the grants that you've either submitted or you're in the process of submitting.
Yeah, so a lot of the recent work I've done as a postdoc was on the use of computer vision for estimation of body weight. And so in that context, we use depth cameras, which means that each pixel is not a color. It is a height information of, or the distance from the camera to the object in the frame. And so I didn't publish any of these things. I have abstracts. As I said, my postdoc was pretty short, but I think it was enough to understand that the technology works, and I think it has not been applied yet in real settings. We have noticed that when we take a model, we implement it with our data set, it has great performance. Then you take it to another farm, or maybe even another area of the farm sometimes, it doesn't quite perform as well. And so I think the need that we have is, we've been exploring a lot of what AI can do in the industry. We have not yet been able to kind of apply to much more realistic settings. And so I thought one way to understand how to bridge that gap is you need data set, large data sets, and you need to have the whole picture of the growth of the animal. For example, in the case of beef cattle, from birth to harvest. And so I had this idea of applying that to turkey hens, which may be unintuitive, but my thinking is I need to understand two main things in the challenge of bridging the gap. One is we need to have multiple animals under the same frame. And there are issues, you know, with obstruction and dealing with all this information in a single frame. How do we do that? And I thought, you know, with turkeys, they're just kind of smaller. And so in a single frame, you can have multiple animals kind of colliding. And I think that will teach me and my group how to address those issues. The second thing, as I said, is the growth. So you know, beef cattle can take up to 2 years. They have up to 2 years of life. And with turkeys, it's much faster. It's, I think, about 4 months. And so that's, I guess, a bit of the safe bet that I'm taking right now, having the expertise on using this computer vision for these depth cameras for cattle. I think using it on turkeys will be also a very good exploration.
Yeah, same on dairy animals, right? You know, many times we can't wait. We're doing some type of trial in calves, and we're looking for that outcome in future growth, even a repro in that heifer, future growth or milk production. That's a 3 year, you know, 4 year trial, right? So yeah, that's really cool. I like when you first mentioned turkeys, I'm like, okay, where do turkeys fit into this? But that's the ability to fine tune that process in a system that is months versus years, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the other thing, which I shouldn't say, but being a computer scientist, it's not like I've had this great experience like handling animals. I started actually going to the farm and doing my data collection now because I only have a student right now. So if we want to collect data, I need to go myself, and I'm learning myself how to handle animals. Handling turkeys, in my opinion, is a little bit easier and less scary for someone who's spent most of his career just behind a desk. So that's the other thing.
I'll have to say too, though, it's also, you know, if you look at some of dairy industry, well-recognized, if you will, experts, many of those, you know, were born and raised in some big city and became dairy folks. So, you know, I think it gives you a unique insight to look in from the look in from the outside, and, you know, not have a lot of preconceived thoughts, if you will, or opinions, because you grew up doing that, so to speak.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm interested in, you know, the computer vision and the depth cameras is kind of like a continuation of what I've been doing. I also want to start exploring my own thing. And to me, that is the use of thermal cameras, for which, you know, you can use for different things. You mentioned the heat abatement, so you could use it for heat stress, but I think you could use it for disease as well. And but the thermal cameras, I think as I look into it, they are very tricky because, and I think I understand why people are not using them that much. You know, there's a lot of work on mastitis. And then when you look at those cameras, those are like point and shoot cameras. So you have like an actual laser and you have to pull the trigger to actually take a measurement. But that measurement is going to be a single point on the animal or like on whatever you're pointing the laser at. And then there is an image attached with it, but the color in that image doesn't mean anything about the temperature. Then there are some more advanced cameras where you have a similar idea. You have to pull the trigger to take the picture, and then you will have a single temperature value for each pixel, so you can have a better idea of the animal or of the otter if you're looking at mastitis. But what I'm interested in, and these are much more expensive, is the constant monitoring of temperature on the animal's body. Through cameras that are not those like point and shoot where you need to trigger, is just recording all the time. You can end up have an understanding of what happens when you have, for example, weather information or the environmental information of the barn. How does the temperature change over time? And this is exactly what I'm exploring right now. What happens, you know, we have these animals in a ventilated area of the farm, and then we take them out to exercise in a more in a warmer environment, is the thermal camera able to pick up on any of that? And our preliminary data is suggesting that, yes, it is possible. Now, yeah, I guess I shouldn't go too much into details of that, and because I haven't published any of this, and, you know, we are still exploring. But I think there is a huge potential, and I haven't found any work that uses this constant recording of the cameras to make some type of prediction on the conditions of the animal. And that's kind of like what I want to make this first part of my career on, ideally, just tackling the algorithms that are necessary to extract information from those thermal profiles.
In terms of the practical application, you mentioned, like, this could be as basic, it's high tech, but basic as to water conservation, when to cool a cow. So, yep, she's standing under a feed bunk sprinkler. So, you know, now in a lot of herds, those sprinklers just run plenty of times. You'd be, all the cows are lying down and you see water being sprayed exactly into the alleys.
Yeah.
You know, there are some systems now that have cameras and or sensors that only turn on when there's cows there. You're actually going another step and saying, yep, there might be a cow there, but her body temperature is within a normal range. Don't put water on her. Correct.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's exactly how I kind of came into this idea. It was the probably first week that I was here. I was walking around with Dr. Cantor at the farm, and I saw the sprinklers going, and there was no animal there. And she told me, like, oh, you know, you should fix this.
You should fix this. I like that.
Yeah, and so I started thinking about how to do that, and that's how I came into the whole thermal camera situation. But yeah, one thing is the thermal camera can still kind of function somewhat as a regular camera and detect if an animal is there or not.
Okay.
When I look at the commercial solutions out there, they kind of like go kind of like overkill, in my opinion, because they will have a single sensor and a single sprinkler in each stall, which I think is maybe excessive. I am all for the least invasive and the like kind of like most the general approach to the use of computer vision. You can have a few cameras and they can all do different things. One can do the body weight estimation. One can do the activity behavior, and one can do the feeding behavior. It's all from the same camera, different like streams of algorithms. And so I thought, if we add a thermal camera there, then yes, you can detect, is the animal close to the sprinkler or not. But then I think I saw some study where they have sprinklers activated by motion, and then the cows understand that the water starts going with the motion, and then they start almost playing with it, and they have fun and they like it.
So they've been trained to turn on the sprinklers.
Exactly. But there are areas in the US and all over the world where, you know, there are droughts and there are issues with the use of water, and everything, you know, everything we do should be done with a sustainable lens. And so I'm thinking, you know, there is a great opportunity not only to stop giving water if the animal is not there, but also if the animal has been cooled, let's wait a while until we give water again. This kind of touches a lot on my past experience. I've worked on power conservation in power grids during my PhD before I got into animal science. And then I also looked at optimization techniques. And so I think we need to kind of figure out, let's assume all of this will work. We can have the algorithms to understand the thermal profile, and we can detect that the animal needs or doesn't need water. Then what is the optimal time window to give the water?
Yeah, no, I think that's part of the answering all these questions also, because we know, you know, various recommendations to cool cows longer in cooling pens, and we do get their body temperature lower, but then they're locked away from feed for a longer period of time. So there's some balance there. You know, actually not cooling them as low of a core body temperature is better, because if you get them lower, then they're away from the pen longer and not eating. So get them back to the pen eating. So all of those, I think there's, you know, the future opportunities with this technology are really endless, and I think really cool as we chat about this more.
Yeah.
So Enrico, as you talked about the turkeys and, you know, animals in group situations, I guess really, you know, similar in a way, a bunch of beef cattle in the pen, a bunch of cows in a freestall. What are some of those challenges of identification of a single animal as opposed to, you know, cows are in a feeding situation close together? Do these cameras can have the accuracy of pinpointing individual animals, correct?
Yeah, so with both turkeys and beef, I think there will still be an issue of identification. When the coat pattern or the plumage, it is all the same color. I think this body weight estimation can be done, but without the identification. That's one thing that with dairy is much easier because you have the coating that's almost like our fingerprint. That's one challenge that I think at this stage we don't necessarily need to address, because then if by looking at the body weight you see that there is a health concern of some kind, maybe there can be some type of platform where you look at the screen and there's a bounding box highlighting what is the animal with the problem, and then the employee can just go and grab them potentially. But I think the challenges have to do with obstruction. For example, when it comes to turkeys, what we're seeing right now is you have a flock in the frame, and the most important part to predict body weight is just like from below the neck all the way to the tail. And if you have like the head of another animal on top of the back, then that's not you cannot use that image. You cannot use that data. So I think one step will be kind of classifying good and bad, usable and non-usable portions of the image to do the body weight estimation. The second thing, which is actually already being done a lot in the research, is called segmentation. So you have animals in the frame. You want to kind of highlight the animal's body, much like you can do like in the gallery of your iPhone. You can like long press on an object and it will kind of pop up and separate that object from the rest of the scene. That's what segmentation is for. Highlight where the animal body is and kind of black out all the rest, because in realistic farm conditions, you want to remove all that noise.
I got to try that on my iPhone now. I didn't know that was an option.
So, yeah. You can just like... And the other challenges, I think we're going to find out. I think one that I expect to have is, you have this image has a certain angle. There is a bit of a distortion that you can have on the sides of the image. When you have an animal right under the lens, because these cameras are top down, so looking down from the ceiling. When you have the animal right under the camera, you will see perfectly what is the body shape. When it's a bit more to the side, you will see kind of like one profile potentially, depending on the orientation of the animal. So I do wonder, do we need to make any adjustment for animals who are on the side as opposed to in the center of the scene? But I think the main thing has to do with obstruction. You have a frame, you will detect several animals under in that frame. How do we make sure to separate each animal within the frame? And how do we kind of discard those animals that have too much of an obstruction to do any body weight estimation altogether?
No, it's really interesting. I think, the ability to fine tune these systems is going to continue to add to the information that we have, rumination technology, activity monitoring, so forth, is just becoming more mainstream. And some of the work that we're doing is looking at, what animals do we need to treat or not treat based on some of this mm-hmm. data. It's really in the same way here. Do these animals need to be cooled or not? Do they need to be addressed in any way? Lameness, mastitis, etc.
Yeah. There's another component actually that I forgot to mention when it comes to computer vision or when it comes to depth cameras. This is a bit technical, but depth cameras use 16-bit information. So that means, as opposed to regular images that you would see on your phone, those are 8-bit images. I don't want to get too technical given this audience, but from this depth camera, you can extract height information of each animal and convert the depth information to a height information. And so a lot of times, when you create a computer vision pipeline for body weight estimation, you would set it in the farm, you know, which height is the camera at, and make your prediction, create your pipeline, it will work, great. Then you go to another farm, the height will be slightly different. And that means that each depth information will be different. The same animal with a height of the camera that is different will have a different depth information because it's further away or closer.
Yeah.
And I think we need to kind of convert those depths to heights so that this can work more in general in different farms. And that's why I think that, again, like in turkeys, it's very easy to do because the barn settings are just different, more approachable. What I want to do is develop a pipeline that works with a certain height for these turkeys, then change the animals, change the pen, set the camera at a different height. I want to make sure that I actually work with the height information of the animal rather than the distance from the camera.
Okay. Yep.
It's a simple adjustment, but you don't see it often in the papers.
No, that's really interesting because, yeah, the ability to less invasively, if you will, you know, capture growth data. You know, many farms, obviously, some of our listeners here, you know, have weight data, height data, you know, average daily gain, and others, we don't have that data. So, you know, really difficult to make a management decision, nutritional adjustments, et cetera, when we really don't know where we are. You know, the classic Penn State growth charts, you're there at Penn State, you know, those are what's used on many operations. But, you know, do we actually have a sample size that's representative of the calves and heifers we have on a dairy?
I think this camera should be adopted. I don't know why they are not adopted yet, because I can understand being not wanting to implement AI and invest on those things, because some of these, to be honest, they are not ready yet. But when we talk about depth cameras, you can have an employee who doesn't need to go there and measure the animal, the height or the width or all of those things, because the cool thing about depth cameras is that you can take measurements on the image itself. And if you click on a pixel, it will tell you, okay, this is the distance from the camera to the animal. And that means you have the height. So those measurements you can do behind a desk if you are an employee. And I don't know. I think there is a lot of potential there in terms of measurements that you can even just do manually without any artificial intelligence.
Some of the opportunities that you have, you know, in your current position, certainly Penn State, you know, working with producers, extension and so forth, actually getting these things adopted in the industry, correct?
Yeah.
Enrico, you know, as you look to the future with what you're doing, you obviously have a really unique career path, as you said, and, you know, from working in the energy sector to now working with cattle, turkeys, agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you see you're working on some of these things, but even as you look towards the future, you know, I think dry matter intake, right? That's something that when we have individual dry matter intake,
that's super hard.
So any thoughts around that? Because, you know, because obviously every cow, when she takes a bite, you know, the average Holstein bite may be this, but have you thought about that much at all, or the application in terms of consumption?
Yeah, my dry matter intake specifically, I think is very hard. I haven't done it personally, but in my previous group at Dorea's lab, they have been trying to do that. And it's not only to implement the technology. What is really difficult is gathering the ground truth data. So you want to train your algorithms on data where, you know, you have...
How do you train it?
How do you train with proper dry matter intakes? That is like, you cannot take it from the cow, measure it on a scale, put it back in their mouth.
You need small scale individual feeders. And then that changes the feeding behavior of that cow, because she's not in a pen of 250 cows and she has an ID reader. And so.
Yeah. So I know this has been very challenging. I guess the only thing I think we can do is maybe look at, are we talking individual stalls or all together? because that makes a bit of a difference, in my opinion. I think if we can start from individual stalls, then we can have, again, whether it is depth imaging of like even spectral data of assessing, you have a little bunch of feed, you know how much it is, take a picture and train a model to be able to estimate this is how much feed is there, and then slowly take some away and keep training the data with that information, just looking at the feed without any animal.
Okay, I
think that could be a good way to start. I don't know if anybody has done this, but that's where I would start from. I think actually at ADSA last year, I did see an abstract that was kind of doing exactly that. And it was doing it just with regular RGB images, like color images. I think if you integrate depth, so you have information of like how large, what is the shape of the actual feed when it's accumulated all together. If you integrate a bit of that and maybe some spectral data that will be able to understand, you know, different elements in the diet will have slightly different spectral information because of the density of the material itself that is being fed. Then maybe you can
start to get that together.
Yeah, but it doesn't excite me. It sounds very painful. I know it's very hard, and it takes a lot of technology.
Very interesting, and I think you know, in short time, you do have some technologies that could be user available. I think, you know, cow-cooling, right? That seems, it doesn't need to be perfect, right, to implement it. If it reduces water use and we get closer to cooling the cow correctly, I think some of these things can be implemented during development even. So I think that's pretty exciting. And obviously body weight, body height, really basic measurements, but you know, how many dairies are routinely capturing that information on all animals? I think some basic data, but some really important data as we make management decisions on the dairy. So thank you for your overview.
Absolutely.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Our Yeast 40 ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of Smartamine N, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain your lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
As we wrap up here, you know, the three famous questions, if you will, you know, what, and this is, I think, really relevant or interesting for you. What's a resource that you go to for dairy? Lots of folks we talk to, you know, they have been in dairy for many, many, many years, their entire career. As kind of being new to dairy, what are some resources that you use on the dairy side?
For me, I think the biggest thing, at least so far, has just been colleagues. Well, I was a postdoc at UW Medicine. I was in a postdoc office with a colleague, another postdoc, Guilherme Menezes. And, you know, every now and then, especially at the beginning, I would just read a paper that was talking about, for example, productivity. And they kept talking like first lactation. I was like, why are they talking about first lactation? I'm just interested in lactation. And I was like, he told me like, oh no, you know, that's just like what you look at when you're doing a research paper like that. So I would have just like these very basic questions because of my background that I had no idea about. Or there was another one that I think made people laugh. I think it was, I don't even remember, but the colleagues right now are my resource, and Penn State, UW Medicine, you know, being a postdoc, I could just talk to the other guys in the lab. Now that I I have my own lab. I need to rely on colleagues. And Penn State really has this very unique feeling that everybody is family. I have always been extremely welcome when I approach someone and ask a question, extremely helpful. And so I'm very happy to be here. When I don't have that access, I have started using some tools. One is called consensus.app. It's kind of like a website powered by AI, but the cool thing is you can pose a question. For example, I don't know, what is the most used heat abatement strategy in dairy cow? You will put that question, it will give you a bunch of papers as and why it was selected. So I've been using that quite a lot when I'm trying to kind of brainstorm projects.
What was that called again?
It's called consensus.app.
Consensus. Okay, great.
They do have other features like synthesizing stuff, but I don't rely too much on those. I just want to get the information and then, you know, then I open the paper. It kind of facilitates my search. The literature search. And I also like some tools. One is called Lit Maps, that those give you kind of like a graphical view of the papers and how they're connected together. And I like to look at things visually. And so that is a good way to understand how things are connected and what comes before another and who cited who. And it's great to find new research that's coming out.
Cool. Okay. So consensus and lit maps. I'll have to check those out. On the more, when you're not working or disconnecting, anything recently you recommend to the group, either a read, a documentary, a podcast, something?
I do like, there is a newsletter that's called, it's from Nature. It's called Nature Briefing. And this was from another postdoc at UW told me, his name is Gustavo Mazon. They have basically all the latest AI, applied AI novelty in the field. I'm not sure if this question is still related to work or if it's more personal, but this feels like more distance from there. It's just like, how are people using AI? And that sometimes can give you like an idea of how to use it in your own field.
The other or last question, if you will, and again, you have a unique perspective because you haven't been in this industry so long. What do you think separates some of the producers that are going to have longevity in the industry? And I don't know, progressive, but longevity in the industry.
I think I cannot really answer that question because I don't have that background. What I can kind of answer is when it comes to researchers and computer vision researchers, especially. As I said before, many times people have been using depth camera for body weight estimation. But oftentimes they take that 16-bit information and as soon as you put it into a visual image, that automatically becomes an 8-bit information where you lose all the height. It's just a kind of a visual of what's closer to the camera, what's more distant, which it can still be useful, but you do lose that approach to have good performance across farms. And so I think, you know, I'm still very grateful for all the research that has been done and all the exploration. I think we just need to start looking at real field conditions. And then the second thing that I see a lot is, this is not even computer vision related, but still kind of AI and machine learning is, this is a mistake that I did myself. When you have a big data set with a lot of animals, you know, when you train a model, you need to separate training and testing. Many people just do that in a random way. You always need to make sure that your training has certain animals, your testing has completely different animals. Otherwise, the performance are kind of overly optimistic. And so that is a mistake that I've done in my very first paper and that I see still to this day, whether it's turkeys, dairy cattle, or beef, is still a mistake. And it's a problem because then you're trying to predict something that your model has already seen.
Yes.
Because that animal is already there, maybe from the day before, but you know, is still very likely to make a good prediction with that information.
So those are some great insights, Enrico. I really thank you for your time today. We had a few technical issues getting logged in, but it all worked out here. And to all of our listeners, thanks for support of the Dairy Podcast Show. We look forward to seeing you again soon. And Enrico, again, thanks again for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I hope, you know, to be back maybe a year or so from now and actually say what I was able to deliver in terms of the research I'm trying to do.
That would be perfect. Lots of time. Many researchers out here would say, stay tuned, not only for popular press publications, but also Journal Dairy Science, etc., and repeat on the Dairy Podcast Show. So with that, signing off, Mark Thomas here. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.